How do you translate the whole opera Villa into an event on a boat? How much do you do? How much dialogue? How many greatest hits? How many dances? All that stuff.
We actually do as much of the full show as we're able to. We have cut some parts that just really don't give as much to the story. We didn't cut anything famous.
Mm-hmm. No, you
there are actually so many versions of this out there that it was kind of hard to find a version that had all the same parts. I mean, people have just been chopping this up for a long time. But the really exciting part is that now that we've finally gotten enough excitement from our fan base to have three boats instead of two, which we started last year, we actually get to have a single stage in the center of the three boats, and it's theater in the round. And so what we used to do, if you didn't attend last year, what we used to do is have people sitting on two boats, and we had two different stages, and it was a little bit more of a concert version. We're taking it, it's still partly concert version, but we take it a little bit further this time with all of our artists on individual mics, our leads at least, and we're able to move around. So, for example, in the waltz that you just had, we have the ability for our two lead artists to stop and waltz and kind of dance around the boat. And so it's a little bit – we do as much as we possibly can of the show while keeping it – within the time frame we have.
Sure. And speaking of the time frame, we're talking about the cruise, which is this Sunday night. The boat actually departs at 7 o'clock there from the Coeur d'Alene Resort, and loads, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes ahead of time, the way they like to do. And then you have the issue of needing an orchestra on board, and you have a superb orchestra in a unique way. Talk about this gentleman returning to his home, the town that helped educate him, and then we'll make it, let him defend himself.
Well, I'm really excited to be able to introduce this guy. So Scott Rednor, sitting right here next to me, he and I have known each other for just about 20 years. He was one of my coaches and then became a great friend at Manhattan School of Music in New York. And when Mateusz and I were thinking about moving here, I just mentioned to him, I said, well, I don't know anything about this part of the world, but we're looking to move into Spokane. And he just said, oh, my goodness, Spokane is this fabulous place. And I, after knowing you for almost a decade at that point, found out that Scott was from this part of the world. So he studied with Margie May Ott. And he knows all of the people in town. He knows you, of course, and your lovely wife. And finally, I'll let him talk about it, but he has decided to move back here, and this town is just so lucky.
Yeah, welcome back.
I'm lucky.
A good town just got better, and I know we're going to embarrass you right in front of yourself. First, good morning, Scott.
Happy to do that.
Good morning.
And so, as immodestly as you can, talk about the amazing career you've had and what you've done in the world of vocal coaching.
Well, I feel very lucky because of the people I met in New York and the people I was able to work with, great artists, people you probably have heard of, like Bobby White, the tenor. I was able to do shows with William Warfield.
Wow.
And
what a legacy.
Did productions with Maria Zuez and her husband, Charles Milnes. Wonderful conductors. Tim Long is one who's coming up and doing wonderful work. Steve Osgood, very, very fine. And I just feel very lucky to have been placed in New York and been able to do a lot of work at Manhattan School of Music, many, many productions, and meet many young singers who now have gone on to enormous careers all over the globe.
Describe the job of a vocal coach.
Well, they really are the ones that have to know the most about the show in the room. They have to know all the words. They have to know the orchestration. They should know every singer's part and be able to mimic the conductor if need be to help the singers get through. They're the ones that are like the note police.
The note police.
who make sure that people are singing what's on the page and not making it up. And and so our job is really to help the production be better by making sure that all the parts of in terms of the music are there.
And as you do all that work, everything's integrated in music. Does it leak over into the province of what the voice teacher or the vocal coach would have done? How does that, where does that lie?
That's a very tricky place to be. And what you have to do is you have to trust that the singer and their teacher have a good relationship and that's working. And you have to encourage that and support that in every way you possibly can.
Yeah. And so you're back here and you've moved back, and so we won't make you publicly commit too much, but you're going to be professionally active in our community, aren't you?
I would like to do as much as I can here.
Oh, that's, yeah, and I know that the singers are all salivating over that fact, because it is a unique skill that is that we don't have too many of right around here, and so that's really great. Well, welcome back, Scott Ridenour.
Thank you very much.
And then you also, if I can look at from the outside, you have to have such a natural ease with your piano playing, with the score, that you have plenty of brain left for everything else, don't you? That you can just kind of do that without thinking about it?
Well, that's tricky because you have to have your eye and ear on every part of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just practice. You just mm-hmm. keep doing it until your awareness is everywhere.
Yeah, but back to Don, that would make it probably fairly perfect for him to be the orchestra for this, because he can just react to anything, respond, and just make it happen.
Well, and he does. I mean, I have nothing else to say about but truthfully, I mean, Scott just really does. And then it's not just the note police, you know, he's catching us on spots where the diction might not be as clear, mm-hmm. or, you know, one thing he didn't mention is that vocal coaches, they have to know all the tricks. So even though they don't step too much on technique, you know, vocal technique itself, he's got lots of diction tricks and so many other things. And he also helped us with the cuts that we were mentioning before, mm-hmm. just to get the right flow. You know, he knows the show extremely well. And, yeah, we're excited.
Yeah, so that we're talking about the opera cruise with Merry Widow on Sunday evening on Coeur d'Alene Lake, that Inland Northwest Opera, previously Opera Coeur d'Alene, or maybe a few other names in its past, has done. But you have your new name, you have your new sense of mission. Now you have to cast it. We got an orchestra, so now describe the cast of the three or four principal characters of The Merry Widow.
Honestly, that's the most fun part. We've got a really fantastic cast this year, and I think it's the largest cast we've ever had on the boat, because there are a lot of really funny, small characters as well. So our five principals, you know, two of us, and then there are three that have this is his first time here in town. You'll talk to him in a second.
This is Tim,
but everyone else,
Tim Augustine.
Tim Augustine. Mm. But everyone else has graced our presence at least one time before. So our Danilo is Andy Wachowski, who is fantastic, baritone out of Minneapolis. Tess Altiveros from Seattle, making big splashes this last couple months here with O&E, that crazy production in Seattle of the Orpheus and Eurydice story. She's doing the Hannah. Then I'm Valenciennes, which Tim roped me into doing since we've been friends for so long. I agreed to sing with him. And then, really fun, he hasn't been with us for quite some time, but Steve Mortier is our Baron Zita, which is fantastic.
All right.
But we have a couple. We've got a great, great young tenor. Connor Ely is singing one of our secondary roles. Lars Melander is someone who had a career for quite some time, and he's singing a smaller role as well. And a bunch of names we've seen. Kent Kimball is with us. Josh Vanderplatz, Karen Hunt. It's a great cast.
Yeah, good combination.
Yeah.
Well, let's meet Tim. Good morning, Tim, and welcome.
Good morning, Vern. Thank you.
Tim Augustine, who you live in the D.C. area?
That's correct.
But you sing everywhere, don't you?
I'm starting to sing everywhere.
Yeah, because last time we were in touch with each other, you were in the Twin Cities, I think, weren't you, in Minnesota? Or where were you last
well,
a few months ago?
A few months ago, I was in Minneapolis a few months ago. I was in Lima, Peru a few months ago. It's hard for me to keep my schedule straight myself.
Okay. So. And as a tenor, you're busy doing a lot of stuff, and probably if they call and you can and will, you will do it. What's your focus? What kind of tenor are you? What are some of the things you do?
I'm a light lyric tenor. I do a lot of bel canto, a lot of Rossini, Mozart, Donizetti, Bellini. And I do an awful lot of 20th century music.
And do you do that partially because you have great ears and can?
I do it because I have high notes and I'm cheap.
Well, there's a little honesty there. More modesty than we expect, right? And briefly, we'll mention that you have three things going on. Tomorrow night, you're involved with a fundraiser for what organization?
The Sheriff's Boys Ranch.
Okay, so you'll be doing that Friday night, and then Sunday night, the thing that we're talking about. And then you'll be joining us in the Mozart concert on Tuesday and Wednesday, doing Mozart and many other things.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, well, what let's do, we've met everybody. Let's hear from you, and then we'll talk a little bit more. So talk about this duet. It's mostly a tenor solo with
mostly tenor solo with little soprano interjections. You're welcome.
Yeah, and the name of the duet in English, Love in My Heart. Should we just send you out to do it? Anything we need to say about it?
No, but well, just that Camille has been courting Valenciennes the entire show. Who is married? We're all married. All the women in the show are married. And she has spent the first act telling him what a respectable wife she is and how, this is not something that they can do and he must marry. And she's trying to pawn him off on the Merry Widow. But he charms her with his beautiful voice and lyricism and high notes into...
Yeah.
Sneaking off.
Well, I guess...
Spoiler alert!
I guess we could say that if we... actually, I'll talk about it while you guys go out and
get
ready to sing. But so they can't defend themselves, I would say that if there were no infidelity, why have opera? And so they're going to our studio, and we'll hear principally it is tenor Tim Augustine singing Love in My Heart, but Don Volsky will be joining him in this as they are in our studio. So let's give them a moment to get ready and then let them know. And here is this duet that will be done on Sunday night from The Merry Widow, Love in My Heart. For beauty. Live in our studio, we were just hearing Tim Augustine, the tenor, Don Volsky, the soprano, and Scott Redenauer, the pianist, doing this duet from The Merry Widow, Love in My Heart, the name of the duet. And as you hear, the Merry Widow, which is being done as the program on Sunday night on the opera cruise, is going to be in English, and so it should make it a lot easier to really stay engaged with what the whole thing is. A few of the technical details: it is the boat leaves at 7 o'clock. It loads soon after six, right there outside the resort in Coeur d'Alene. And as always, the expedient way to do this is simply go to their website of Inland Northwest Opera, and one can immediately sign up for the tickets and get all of the details and all the things that need to be done, right, Don?
Yes, I'll just add that there is, just because it's hot outside and there's a lot of people to get registered, we do actually have registration inside the resort.
Oh, that's
starting
nice.
Earlier, and there's a no-host bar, and they're, you know, people can chat good. With so us and have a few other things. So people can show up to the resort as early as 5:30 and just register via your last name, and kind of like you would going onto the airplane.
Sure.
Get a little registration ahead of time. And that saves a lot of commotion and everything.
Frankly, it's going to be a fairly warm day. And so it will be just warm enough that at 7 o'clock as the boat leaves, people will start being glad that it's not quite that warm half an hour later.
Yeah, and it gets cool by the end, too.
It sure does.
It's kind of the nature of...
Goes, what, a couple hours?
Mm-hmm. It does, for 2 hours. So you'll be there for the sunset. Mm-hmm.
Seven to nine, yeah. Okay, talk a little bit about the season, about the concept, about some of the directions for Inland Northwest Opera.
Well, it's a really exciting season for us. The reason we finally changed our name to INO, as we call it lovingly around the house here, Inland Northwest Opera. We had two opera companies here in this region for quite some time, as you're well aware. Mm-hmm. Between Spokane Opera and Opera Coeur d'Alene, I realized we had almost a half century worth of bringing great opera to this region, but it was kind of hard to support both at the same time. And there was discussions many different times over the years of joining, and it just, the timing didn't work out. And but there was a real void in Spokane. Mm-hmm. And half of our patrons were in Coeur d'Alene, half in Spokane, or that's not really mm-hmm. accurate, but certainly the surrounding areas as well. And so we have finally committed to being a performing arts organization here that serves both communities equally. We're really not trying to have a foothold singularly in one place or the other. And so our season this year, it's usually three main events, though we launched with a great education program and tour. We had Hansel and Gretel this year, which was wonderful. We have our cruise in July, which is we've been talking about. Then we have a really fun black tie optional gala. We're bringing in singers from Seattle and Portland mostly for that in August. And then our main stage this year, we, for the first time, are doing a fully staged production at the Martin Woldson Theater at the Fox in Spokane. And that's The Marriage of Figaro, like I said, and it's our first comedy, not first comedy, but, you know, in the last couple years we haven't had one. 2016, I guess, we had Barber of Seville, but
yeah,
it's a good season. It's really exciting, and the town has really, both towns, they've really rallied in support around us, which is encouraging. It's important to have an opera company in a town of this size.
Absolutely. Well, so that's, and so one can get kind of at the ground floor of it in its certain reconfigured way by Sunday night, the cruise with Merry Widow, as we've talked about. And then I think on our way out, we're going to ask Renee Fleming to help us out with Vilja. Talk about the role and who is singing Vilja and really what's going on at that moment in the opera.
Well, that's, I'll let Scott talk about that as well.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, Tess Altivaros is our beautiful Seattle-based singer who's coming in to sing this role.
The plot is that it's set at the Pontevedrian embassy, and where Pontevedro is. And Hanna was a poor farmer's daughter when she was back in Pontevedro, and now, having married wealthy, she's now a widow. And what has transpired in the years is that her husband had lent or bought a lot of things for Pontevedro to keep it solvent. And they suddenly realize that she's in Paris to look for a husband. And should she marry someone who's French, all the money, everything that Pontevedro owns would suddenly become French. So the embassy, everybody who works at the embassy, including the ambassador, are all worried about that and asking wives and all the workers to do everything they can to keep the Frenchman from courting Hanna. Danilo comes in. He has had a relationship with her in the past, but because he is part of a ruling family, he was forbidden to marry her because she was poor. And so there's the conflict is he doesn't want to admit he loves her, and he certainly doesn't want to love her for her money. And everybody else seems to be. So the secondary plot is Camille and Valenciennes. Camille, of course, is French, and he's very interested in Valenciennes, who is actually the wife of the ambassador.
And then pulling all this around to Vilja.
That's right. Vilja is begins second act, and it is in the score. It is advertised as a folk song from Pontevedro, and a lovely piece. You see it, you hear it often, and it's wonderful in every way you hear it.
So that's how we're going to go out. We'll let Renee Fleming be wonderful in that. Thank you to the three of you for coming in and
thanks for having us.
Illuminating this happening just this Sunday night. And here is that oh-so-famous Vilja.